Well, I'm with DeviantArt. My name is Josh Waddles. I'm the advisor-in-chief for DeviantArt, which is a title that I invented myself, and I'm very proud of it. And I would recommend to any of you, if you would like to come up with a title, to refer yourselves as advisor-in-chief. Feel free. I have no proprietary interest in the title. But I can tell you it impresses some people, maybe not this audience, but it has impressed other people in the past. So it does work. DeviantArt is a very large website. How many of you are familiar with DeviantArt? Pretty much everyone. For those of you who are not, it's a top 150 website in the world by traffic. There are many, many websites, so being in the top 150 is fairly significant. We've been on the internet for 15 years. We're sort of only 2 years younger than Google. And what DeviantArt does is aggregate art, mostly visual art, by a sort of extraordinary collection of artists. We have over 34 million registered members of DeviantArt. Much more than half of them are artists. And they have placed somewhere in the vicinity of 350 million pieces of art on the site so far. We also, a little less than a year ago, introduced our app on both iOS and Android. It's a top-rated app, certainly in the art vertical. And it's literally an art gallery in your hand. You can open up the app and browse all 350 million works of art if that's something you would like to do. But you could also just choose to browse a few. And I highly recommend that you download the app. Actually, the designer of the app is in the audience today, and he really did a fantastic job. So that's DeviantArt. This thing keeps popping up. Is there a way to get that to stop popping up? Okay, good suggestion. So this panel is on art theft, and it is an announcement of sorts as well, because we've just released at the URL, which you'll see down here, a nine-journal collection of articles with some detail about the issues that we'll go through today. And the notion and idea of posting this journal comes from the following. Almost since inception on DeviantArt, the members of DeviantArt have complained about this notion of art theft and have been very concerned about it. The people who came on DeviantArt in the early days of DeviantArt were actually the first artists to experience the results and impact of placing their work on the internet and the possibility that their work would be appropriated as a result of being so readily available. And they were testing the waters in many ways. And art theft was always a big issue. And we would deal with it sometimes in situations where it got out of control, where we were dealing with actual problems between artists accusing each other of appropriation that they felt was inappropriate. And we also were a leader in takedown notices under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and providing mechanisms for that to be easy to do. And Jack will be talking about that a little bit during this talk. But we never really confronted it head on. And we think that after 15 years, it's important to have an open dialogue about it. We think that things have matured enough on the internet so that people are developing more varied points of view about it. Things are just a little bit less people standing in their corner fighting with each other, and a little bit more people coming together and trying to develop consensus over appropriate behavior. And things are changing radically in the art world in terms of appropriation and the way in which both society and the arts look upon the appropriation of images that belong or were made by other people. So we've launched this journal. We hope that it becomes really a core conversation. And the comments that are made to this journal will be, I mean, those that have weight to them, will be responded to by lawyers or by young law students under the direction of lawyers. They're not going to give legal advice, but they will have a level of understanding of the issues that is quite professional. And hopefully that will be an educational hub for people who are interested in this issue and who are concerned, and rightfully concerned, about putting content on the internet and the way that it ends up being used. So that's the purpose of our having this panel, and we'll move right into it. So I'm going to give a little bit of a talk on some topics in this area, then pass it on to Jack Lerner. Jack is a professor at the University of California Irvine School of Law, which is a relatively new school and already one of the top ranked in the country. I consider Jack to be one of the top, you know, handful of lawyers in the area of internet law specifically, as well as intellectual property law. He has, you know, credibility from being back east at Harvard and credibility from being a lawyer in the Silicon Valley before he went into education, and he's a full professor. Jack, before UCI, was a professor at USC, where he recruited me to teach copyright at USC. So we go back a ways, we're good pals, but Jack is really one of the top experts in the field, and I think we're very fortunate to have him on the panel. And then sitting next to me is DJ Welsh, who's an artist, very good artist, I would say. Excellent, brilliant artist, perhaps.
Keep going.
One of the most extraordinary artists in modern times. DJ currently is lead concept artist at Glue Mobile, a mobile up in San Francisco. He started his career as an artist at Cartoon Network, I believe, as an intern in terms of professional career. I'm sure before that he was tagging all kinds of stuff. He worked on Adventure Time. And he's done work for Blizzard, Marvel, DC, and Lego. Those are pretty strong credentials, particularly at Comic-Con, and I'm delighted that he's agreed to be on our panel. And DJ will hopefully give us perspective and be able to answer questions that you may have from a highly practical point of view of what does an artist do about these things. And he has a very healthy perspective on it. So, launching right in. So, art theft tends to be a colloquial term, but that covers all forms of appropriation and copyright infringement. People throw at each other as, you know, that's art theft, that's art theft, that's art theft. But as a technical matter, art theft is, in fact, the physical stealing of art. Theft is a criminal matter. It's a technically in the law tort on the civil side. But theft is accusing someone of committing a crime. And most people who throw the word theft at each other don't really mean it that way. I think it's a charged term, and hopefully it's a term that reduces in use. But it does apply accurately to the actual physical stealing of art, and that does happen. I just spoke to an artist down in the alley who recovered a couple of his works that had been stolen. If you are in a position where your work gets stolen physically, do report it to the police. If it's highly valuable, you also report it to the FBI, and they will report it to Interpol, because there's a very large international market in stolen art, which ISIS is taking advantage of right now by stealing antiquities from the sites in the areas in which they've taken over control and putting them into the market. So do report it. It's a real crime. Plagiarism is a version of copyright infringement, and a version of unfair competition in the sense of taking advantage of someone else's work and claiming it as your own, which is not necessarily copyright infringement. And most usually, plagiarism is applied to written word content rather than to visual art. There have been all kinds of great plagiarists. One of them is this guy called Putin, who's been caught plagiarizing vast amounts of speech material. And then this guy, Ted Kennedy, he, you know, sort of cheated his way through college and then became a U.S. senator. You know, plagiarism is considered cheating. And on an ethical level, it's considered cheating. You're taking someone else's work, you're claiming it as your own, presenting it as your own. And then there's copyright infringement, which we'll go into in detail. Taking, I don't want you to not see this wonderful picture of tracings of cave paintings. So tracing is a form of taking. Copying, mimicking is a form of taking. Appropriation is a form of taking, which may inherently not be illegal. And may in many circumstances be part of the warp and weave of being in the arts, particularly tracing. On DeviantArt, people get very upset about tracing, but tracing is really one of the core ways in which you can learn style and technique of other artists. When it's done entirely non-commercially and completely for the purposes of your own educational development or to present your development to other people, there's an ethical issue as to whether an artist whose work has been traced really should be upset about it or perhaps feel flattered by it. And tracing goes back centuries. You know, Raphael traced off of Michelangelo and vice versa. So it's a charged issue for artists. It is considered by many art professors and teachers to be a terrible way to learn how to draw. And by others as an excellent way to learn how to draw. So there's even controversy within that. But it's a form of copying that in and of itself may not be wrong, but which people within the world of the arts might be concerned about as a taking. And then there's appropriation art, and appropriation art is, if you go back a little bit, is exactly what Andy Warhol did. And if you're in the modern art world today, it's what Richard Prince does all day. And appropriation art is the process of taking a pre-existing piece of art and shaping it in a different way by using it potentially in its entirety. Sometimes it's by just the contextual change, and sometimes it's by using it underneath and putting things on top of it, using it in collage, and other techniques. Collage, of course, is a technique that goes back quite a ways. So copyright is the granddaddy of protections for artists, and it is, in fact, an extraordinarily powerful group of exclusive rights. Anybody who's in the arts, who's been to listen to a lawyer talk about art stuff, has gone through the list of copyright rights, but it's always worth repeating what they are because they're so broad, although limited, and they're so strong. So you develop copyright in a work as you make it in the United States and most other countries in the world, automatically, without registration being a requirement. And as you are making your work of art, you have the exclusive right to copy the work or to permit people to copy it, the exclusive right to distribute the work or to permit people to distribute it, the exclusive right to alter the work yourself or to permit other people to alter the work, the exclusive right to create derivative works, make a movie out of the storytelling that appears in the image that you made as an artwork, by way of example. And you have the exclusive right to display the work publicly. These are extraordinarily strong rights, which, as a matter of natural regular law, in other words, playground law, the kind of law that kids understand, you wouldn't get. You only get these rights because a legislature somewhere along the line figured out that this would be a good thing for the culture to protect artists in this way so that they would make more. That's really the bottom line of copyright. what can we do to incentivize the creation of cultural works? We'll create this law that does that. And that's really the core purpose of copyright. Copyright only applies to original works of authorship, but the standard of originality is really quite low. But the most important thing to understand about copyright in the art theft discussion is this notion that copyright only protects the expression of an idea and not the idea itself, which is why we have three cats on this slide. So the idea here is a cat driving on Mars, right? The execution of that idea is completely different in all three instances. Each one of these works is not an infringement of the other. But they all have a great deal of similarity to each other. The similarity that they have is mostly in idea and style not style, but in impact on the individual. They're all done in the comic style. They're all done in a humorous way. These are things that are not protectable by copyright. But the specific expression is. So if someone took one of these images and put it on a t-shirt, it would be copyright infringement. Jack?
Hey, I want to also add, you know, this is why you see, you know, two asteroid movies coming out at the same time that aren't infringing on each other, and why back in the day we had Beat Street, but before Beat Street came out, which is a famous movie about the breakdancing subculture, the hip-hop culture in general, we had Breakin', and then we had Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo, right? And so those.
You were in that one.
I wish I was in that one. I was a fan of breakdancing at the time, but I was not a breakdancer. What I'm going to talk about for a few minutes to supplement Josh's very fine introduction is the concept of fair use and how that applies to fan art. Now, obviously, if you go downstairs, there is booth after booth, artist alley, all over the place. There are people, and we may have one here, who do amazing, wonderfully creative, absolutely brilliant fan art, right? Where you're taking something that everybody knows that's copyrighted, that's a franchise or a piece of art that's worth millions and millions of dollars, and people are making fan art. Why is this tolerated? Why is this allowed? A lot of very good reasons why it happens, right? And one of the main reasons is because we have the First Amendment here, and talking about culture, the same way we're talking about Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo, and Beat Street, and the asteroid movies, and the cat riding a car on the moon, is the same reason why you can do fan art to a degree. So the law respects fan art in a number of ways, and we'll talk about that. I want to back up before we get too deep in fan art and talk about the concept of fair use. Who has heard the term fair use here in the audience? A lot of you, but not by any stretch, it looks like all of you. Or you're just bored and not paying attention, which I totally get as a professor. What is a professor? What we like to profess. I'm actually also a lawyer with a law practice, which I'll talk about later. But
which could be even more boring.
Yeah. So if you really want to be bored and hopefully intimidated, no, just kidding. If you're intimidating as a lawyer, then you're not doing a very good job, I think. So fair use is what we like to think of as copyright's safety valve. So that it's copyright's First Amendment safety valve, right? The First Amendment says, I can say whatever I want to say. That's what the First Amendment's about, right? And you can't do certain things like, you know, yell fire in a crowded theater resulting in lots of people being trampled to death. But by and large, you can say whatever you want to say, and that includes talking about culture. That includes saying, I think that, you know, the president is an idiot, or I think that the Speaker of the House is an idiot, and lots of other things. And it also might include saying things like, well, what would happen if Superman was actually gay? Or what would happen if Superman and Batman decided to have a different kind of a relationship, right? Whatever it might be. Those kinds of things are protected by the First Amendment. And so over 150 years ago, the courts created the doctrine of fair use to say, this is how we're going to make copyright coexist with the First Amendment, right? Because what is copyright? It's saying, hey, I thought up this thing. I thought up an asteroid going to crash into Earth and what's going to happen. And that idea is not protected by copyright, but the story that I created is protected by copyright. And that means that if I tell this story, I write it down or I put it up on the screen or whatever it is, you know, you can't take that and make a copy of it, right? You can't take that and make a sequel to it. And the law says you can't do all these things that normally would be First Amendment expression. You know, I'm going to talk about this, I'm going to talk about that. So fair use was invented by the courts essentially 150 years ago. And really what it is it's the right to use somebody else's work without permission or payment for certain socially valuable purposes. A great example, criticism and commentary, right? So if I'm saying, well, I think Superman is actually a Nietzschean thing that has all kinds of Freudian implications, and I'm going to talk about psychology, right? That's a great example of criticism and commentary. Talking about Superman in an educational context and saying this is the history of comics, whatever. News reporting, the new Superman movie is doing well. And fan art is a form of criticism and commentary in many respects, right? And saying I'm going to subvert with my fan art what everyone else is saying or what this piece of work actually says. Since 1994, the Supreme Court articulated in a case about... Has anyone heard of the Rap Crew, Two Live Crew? Okay, it's actually only a small fraction of you. Well, they created a song called Oh Harry Woman that was based on the film, the song Pretty Woman by Roy Orbison. And they got sued and went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, Two Live Crew can do this because it's a parody, and that's a form of criticism or commentary. They're totally subverting this idea of a pretty woman, and they're saying you're a hairy woman, and they're making fun of street culture and all kinds of other things. And what the Supreme Court did was they articulated essentially a doctrine that's really begun to take over in the courts. Now there have been dozens of cases that amplify and explain and give a lot of detail and contours to this concept of transformative, and the concept is transformative use. And the idea is this: if I take a work and I repurpose it and I use it in a different way, right? And so the purpose of my use might be criticism or commentary is different from the original use, which might be, for example, entertainment. That is going to be generally endorsed by the courts, and you can go forward and do that, right? And what the court said was if you do something and repurpose it in a way that adds meaning or new meaning or expression to the original work, and you use it for a different, the use for which you're making it has been sort of transformed, then that's going to be permitted, right? And so a lot of fan art is... not just, it might not be criticizing, it might be saying, I think that Benedict Cumberbatch, my wife is obsessed with Benedict Cumberbatch, fine, I'm okay with that. But, right? But if, and so today I bought a piece of fan art that prominently features Benedict Cumberbatch as a gift for my wife. Benedict Cumberbatch, maybe all you're saying is, I like his work, right? I like his work, and so I'm going to create fan art that celebrates him. But that's still adding to the conversation, because you're saying this is an expression of love, right? Now, this is maybe what we might call in the law an edge case or something that might push the envelope a little bit, but the reason why there are so many pieces of fan art and why it's generally celebrated and not tried to shut down are very obvious reasons, right? First of all, if people are making fan art of your art, then you're doing pretty well, right? And these are generally people who really love your work. And if they're criticizing your work, you're going to lose anyway because that's a very easy fair use case. And you'd say, this is fair use, you're totally criticizing the work. But even if you're celebrating the work, that would be considered, maybe it would be an edge case, but it's also something that people aren't generally going to go after. One of the things that's in the DeviantArt journal that Josh that Josh and his colleagues created, the Art Theft Journal, is some guidance on fan art that I think is really, really sound guidance, right? And there are basically three things to keep in mind. So one of them is have some respect for the copyright owner, right? And so maybe give credit, maybe make it clear that the fan art is the fan art. a serious commercial exploitation, you know, selling hundreds of thousands of copies, for example, is the type of thing that might get serious attention from a copyright owner and could land the artist in hot water. And we can talk more about that in the Q&A section. But I think a big factor is labeling fan art as fan art is also an important aspect, or an important component of how to do it in a way that's not going to get you into trouble. Should I go on to
Sure. Protection?
Do you have anything to add, Josh?
No, please.
So let's talk now about what you can do to protect your art, whether you're a fan artist or somebody who's an artist. Maybe you've got people making fan art of yours, or maybe not, right? And you know, every artist, once you put something up on the internet, right, the thinking is you run the risk that others will take it and put it up. And has that happened to you? Someone's taken your art, DJ, and put it up?
Yeah.
So we're going to get into that and ask DJ about his story. The thing is that even if you put it up and you run the risk that others will take it and put it up on their page or whatever, or share it in a way that you're not very comfortable with, you still own the rights to that work, right? So access is not the same as ownership, and that's something that's important to remember. There are still lots of remedies that you might have. You'll notice we have a list here that Josh and I put together. And I really have to commend the journal. I think it's a wonderful way to talk about it. You do not have to be a lawyer to read the Art Theft Journal that the DeviantArt folks have created, and I think that's deserving of, you guys should be commended for that, because that's hard to do. But if you look at this list of strategies, right, only two of them deal with copyright. One is create a license, and the other one is just copyright, meaning go after somebody and exercise your copyright rights, right? And that's because, you know, copyright, you have very powerful copyrights. Whenever you create a work of art, even if it's fair use, you have the right to that, not the original artist if it's a fair use. So, for example, I write a piece of criticism that talks all about Superman. I own the rights to that. The Superman people don't have any say in that. And I don't have to pay them, and I don't have to get their permission. But moving back to, if you have a copyright, it can be difficult to enforce that copyright. And that may not be the best way to go about it, right? So let's talk about some of the other strategies that might be available. One is put a watermark on your work. It might be a visible watermark, like on a document, you know, that it says behind it, it says, you know, owned by Jack or whatever. But maybe it's a digital watermark so that you can look at the metadata of the image and the metadata might say, oh, this is owned by so-and-so and so on, right? A lot of people put out their art with lower resolution and then they sell higher resolution on a piece-by-piece basis. And that's a pretty effective strategy for a lot of people. Putting a signature or kind of visible mark on it that says this is mine, and people know it's yours and they know how to get a hold of you. We've written shout it out, right? You can put you post something on DeviantArt, or you post something anywhere. You can put a comment in there, or you can put something next to it on the webpage that says, here's how I feel this could be used, and here's what I don't want it to be used, and these are my preferences, and here's how to get a hold of me, and that can be very effective as well. You can often do that in a more automated way with licenses. A great example is Creative Commons. Who's heard of Creative Commons? Okay, so about a third of you. Creative Commons is this nonprofit organization that was started about 15 years ago, actually, around 2000. And basically, some people got together and they said, you know, copyright, the default is all rights reserved. And everybody has seen, you know, copyright, Warner Brothers, all rights reserved, right? Who's seen that written on stuff? Right? Everybody has, right? Copyright, so-and-so, all rights reserved. Well, for a lot of artists, I don't want to reserve all my rights. I'm putting something up on Instagram because I want people to see it. I'm putting up on DeviantArt because I want people to see it. I'm putting it on my website because I want people to see it. So Creative Commons said, you know what? What if we say copyright Jack Lerner, whatever, some rights reserved, right? And so there are these licenses that you can attach to your work where you can mark with your work and say, this is protected by a Creative Commons license, which means that you can share it, but only for non-commercial purposes. And there's some that say you can share it even if it is commercial purposes. Some people say you can remix it. And some of the licenses say you can share it. You can put it up on your website, but only if you attach the same license on it, like an open source license with software that says that other people can use it as well, right? So you can create a license and market and use tools like Creative Commons. So creativecommons.org is a website for them, and they have hundreds of millions of works that have been licensed under Creative Commons licenses now. Like all of Wikipedia, for example, is under a Creative Commons license. One thing to do when you put something on a site, read the terms of service, go in there. Sometimes they're difficult to read, but if you really care a lot and you wanna spend some time, you can actually, and there's like a website called TOSDR. You've heard of TLDR, right? Who knows what TLDR means? What does it mean?
Too long,
didn't read, which is basically the summary of, like, this. You guys are all waiting for that for this particular talk right now, I'm sure. But there's actually a website called TOSDR, right, which terms of service didn't read because they're too long, where they actually rank different aspects of the website in really easy to read ways. So you can do that. And finally, you can get to copyright, right? And you can get a lawyer and go after someone. That's a very expensive proposition. If you win, sometimes you can get your fees, but that's still after you've spent. Copyright litigation costs hundreds of thousands of dollars, literally. But something you can do that's easy to do, and you don't even need a lawyer to do, is you can send a takedown notice using the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And any user-generated content site actually has a process that's somewhat automated. Where you can basically send a takedown notice, and a lot of you have probably seen those. And of course, this happens a lot on YouTube and other sites. Do you want to go talk about the resolving disputes?
Sure. So, the most important thing for our interest as an artist community and as a user community on DeviantArt is to provide people with context into how to resolve disputes when the dispute occurs. I mean, there's some utility in learning what your rights are before you begin a conversation with people, but it's minimal. I know what my rights are, and every time I start a conversation with my wife, I'm starting from a different place. So, and that's true in conversations between people. And so, not everything is a lawsuit. The fact that, as Jack said, you might have a good copyright claim, well, that's a useful piece of information, but it might not necessarily be relevant in achieving the thing that you want to achieve, which may be to have the other person stop using your work in a particular way. The other thing is to be very aware of the idea expression variance, and not go after people just because they took an idea. Be educated about that issue and understand the difference between it. This has extraordinary cultural sensitivity, and different cultures approach the way in which protection for ideas and expression occur. Some cultures validate copying as the highest level of cultural expression, and encourage copying as a form of expression. Other cultures very, very closely protect concepts and originality. And the internet puts you in touch with every single culture. It's like driving in Los Angeles. The reason why it's so difficult to drive in Los Angeles is because, as a multicultural, multinational environment, everyone learned how to drive in a different place. And when everyone learns how to drive in a different place, guess what? They don't all drive the same way, right? And the same is true for the way in which people approach appropriation and cultural issues. So be sensitive to that. know the context of the other person's use and understand that if it's completely non-commercial and completely in the area of commentary, that in fact their use has a higher level of protection potentially than you have for your own work. And it's really amazing what you can do with a conversation in reaching consensus. Increasingly in the area of family law, by way of example, people are discovering that it's much more productive for the couple to go into mediation and come up with their own solution than it is to go by the rule book of how you split things up and where it should go. And that's exactly the same in most of these situations involving the appropriation of art. You can reach consensus with the person who's appropriated your work quite frequently. You can have someone who's ripped you off on eBay with a t-shirt agree to give you half of the profits. That can happen. Don't forget that that can happen. Instead of jumping immediately to saying with some sort of level of intense accusation that they've ripped you off. Maybe they've helped you as a sub-distributor all of a sudden, right? There are, of course, these serious remedies, and the DMCA is extremely powerful. If you are the copyright owner, if you find your work on an internet site, if that work was put there by somebody else, you can file a DMCA takedown notice. Responsible sites like Google, responsible sites like YouTube, responsible sites like Facebook, like DeviantArt, we all have ways in which you can report a DMCA violation, Digital Millennium Copyright Act, ways in which you state you are the copyright owner, you believe that the work is appearing on their website without your permission, and you demand that they take it down, and they will. We have an automated form on DeviantArt. Most responsible websites also have automated forms. It only takes you a few minutes to fill one out if you're a visual artist. So I highly recommend that approach in some circumstances. But, you know, think before you leap. So, it's DJ's turn now.
Hi, guys.
And before we have a little conversation with DJ, I thought you might like to look at some of the work that he does. I think it's, you know, pretty hot. he probably does, too. And as you can see, like this one, it can depend on third-party intellectual property. So, Jack, why don't you ask DJ the first question?
Well, DJ, I have a lot of questions here. I'm interested. One of the things I'm... By the way, could we turn the lights up? Or at least...
A little bit.
You don't need to see me, and maybe you don't want to see me, but DJ, I want to see, you know, and want to hear what he has to say. So, thank you very much.
That's the alternative.
Huh?
It's either.
Yeah. Sure. I wish we had a spotlight just on over that side, but have you had your art show up in other places? You know, and what have you done about it?
Absolutely. So the good thing about DeviantArt is I started off there, kind of like growing as an artist from like 18 on, like when I started drawing. The good thing about DeviantArt is it has a lot of cool people on there that kind of will go out there if they see something that's yours and kind of point you in the right direction, and they actually might handle it for me. So a lot of times, like, I'll get, like, someone selling my artwork or put it on a phone case or something, and they'll already have made sure that they've sent something to that guy and already handled it for me. So it's kind of great. Other times, if I see someone else post...
Are you talking about DeviantArt staff, or are you talking about other users?
No, just other users.
Right.
They're right there for you. The people on DeviantArt kind of, like, watch out for that. Also, like, if I have artwork put up on someone, like, just they'll take that image and they'll throw it up on their own website and say they drew it. Other people from, like, other users on DeviantArt might actually go on there and comment on it, and they'll get it removed, too. So... It's kind of awesome.
That's great.
I didn't have to do anything.
And it's free.
Yeah, and it's free. Didn't use my time. It was great. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And Jack and I don't get any fees, so it's actually kind of lousy.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, my take, by the way, on that is that, you know, If I'm doing a good job, I'm going to try to you know, minimize the number of fees he's got to pay me and help him resolve the dispute. There's many other ways to resolve the suit besides let's sue him. Let's sue him is the last resort. So if you have a lawyer that hasn't walked you through, if you talk to a lawyer that hasn't walked you through all the other options before he or she says let's sue him, maybe get a second opinion. Okay. Okay, so you've had some good luck in terms of, and this goes to the point that I think is a really important point that Josh brought up, which is context, right? And what kind of community you're in, right?
Yeah.
And the thing about art theft, whatever that means, you know, and it can mean many things. I think the idea of theft, stealing, taking can mean many things, right? You have what you think is right. You have what the community thinks is right. You might also have some ethics, some sort of unwritten rules that are somewhere in between your own morals and the community, right? Then you might have what the technology will allow, right? And as the technology changes, all those other things change too, right? You know, Tumblr is designed for sharing. The whole point of Tumblr is that you put somebody else's content up and then you link back to it, right? And you hope other people link back to it, right? And DeviantArt isn't necessarily the same way. People aren't putting, you know, your art up and saying sort of, this is my expression of who I am. Instead, they're going to be saying, this is DJ's, right?
Yeah.
And then you have copyright. And then you have all the logistics of trying to exercise copyright.
Well, so let me ask, DJ, what do you think about Tumblr-type uses of your work?
Well, it took me a while to jump on Tumblr, actually. I kind of just jumped on there maybe like a month or two ago. But I've had my pieces up there for some years now, where someone will link it to me. Clearly, I didn't post it. I usually don't mind as much when someone links it back to my webpage or my DeviantArt or credits me at least. But sometimes people will crop out your watermark, your signature, Photoshop out your website, and then post it up as them, which usually does suck quite a bit. And I sadly have not had the time to like go out there and just deal with everyone.
Well, is it sort of a visceral feeling? I mean, is it an emotional thing? Is it just like a business thing? Or
yeah, I mean, I really enjoy just people enjoying my artwork and whatever I do, but like it still stinks when it's not like. Like if someone wants to go out there and either buy the artwork or maybe follow my other pieces of an artist like what I do, it stinks if someone doesn't know who actually did the artwork.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you're also an artist that does some appropriation in your own art,
yeah.
Right? So you do artwork based on other people's characters.
Absolutely.
And so what's your internal sort of rheostat on that? What's your sense of right and wrong? And, you know, how do you deal with that? Have you ever been confronted by an original owner?
I'll start off with that question just because I'm not going to remember all that.
I'll try to repeat it.
Yeah, I've never been approached by like someone who owns the characters, like Nickelodeon or anything like that. I have heard of people getting approached by like. If you're instead of making just artwork prints like what I do, making like T-shirts or bags or mugs, for instance, like merchandise, I've heard companies coming up to artists and asking them not to sell those.
What do you think the balance is in using someone else's work?
I like chose these images,
right.
For instance. So like some of these.
Which one do you want me to put up?
So like let's go to the Mega Man one. So, like, some of my artwork that I sell is...
I am so proud of myself that I know what Mega Man is.
So, some of the artwork I put up here is original. Others is just fan art. And then some of them I was hired to do or asked to do by another company that has So this company, Udon, they do tribute books. So, they'll ask, like, artists to come in. They've got, I think they get the license from the company to allow them to sell that book.
Right.
And then I'll work for that company and produce an artwork for that book, in which that company allows me to sell and they sell it in their book. So that's why I chose a lot of these images, was to kind of show that it's interesting because some artists will just do fan art, but some artists also sell artwork they've been commissioned to do. So.
Yeah. And in this case, what's the circumstance? These are all characters that you've done in different situations, and you combine them into a single work?
No, so this is all characters from one video game, a Capcom video game, that is, and I drew those characters, and they wanted me to draw it for their book.
Right. So, but what about a piece like this one?
So that one I was not hired to do. That one is just me kind of going out there when I was a kid, just wanted to concept out a character. So realistically, the characters didn't look like that either. I actually aged them up quite a bit just to kind of do my own thing on them, because really when you're drawing fan art, usually I like to use it as an exercise, especially back then, to kind of grow as a concept artist. So you can basically take that character, you want it to be in your style, but still look and feel like that character.
So this is what Jack was talking about in terms of transforming.
Yeah.
And ethically, you feel this is perfectly fine.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. And if you were the artist hired to do the original work from which this character evolved, you'd feel the same way.
Yeah, definitely. It's weird because in art school, when you're younger, a lot of people get weird about, say, your favorite cartoon character is Ninja Turtles, and you go out there and you some students will go out there and just draw Ninja Turtles every day, just learn that style and kind of kill it. And other students who are more fine artists will really want to find how they feel, their own voice, how they would approach certain characters. But when you actually enter the workforce, you actually should be able to, depending on the job, but should be able to kind of copy styles. It's another muscle, but like, so a lot of companies like Nickelodeon or Cartoon Network actually want you to be able to draw SpongeBob if you're going to work on SpongeBob.
Makes sense.
If you can't draw SpongeBob, get off that show. So like a lot of those companies actually want you to be able to, like Marvel wants you to make Wolverine look like Wolverine. Unless you're a very specific type of artist, some artists they bring their style to the table and they want them to do them. But that's very rare.
Yeah, so this is interesting because copyright says, okay, no one can make a copy. It's against the law. Make a copy without anyone's permission, or to use a copyrighted character in another piece of art without someone's permission.
Yeah.
But yet, in these industries and with all these companies where they're the copyright owner and they're making all this money, they want people to say, okay, draw these and send them in, right? And they know that they're going to also be drawing, Nickelodeon knows that someone's going to be drawing SpongeBob and submitting that over to Comedy Central or whatever for work over there. And this is a norm that is totally accepted within the industry of people who are trying to get jobs in animation and in design and other things, right? So I think it's a very interesting contradiction, and this is one of the things that copyright lawyers and copyright policymakers really struggle with, which is that if you took copyright and said, I'm going to wave a magic wand so that nothing is permitted that's not that's technically in violation of copyright, it would shut off just a huge amount of speech that really ought to be allowed, right? And that's why fair use is such an important component of copyright law. So it's very interesting from a legal perspective to have conversations and to come to Comic-Con and say, oh my God, copyright law is so out of sync with how people actually express themselves and how people actually do things, both in terms of people in their garage or in their bedroom making stuff, and people in copyright-heavy industries, the entertainment industry, and how they do things. It's very, very interesting.
So I'd like to wrap us up, and move to your questions, because that's one of the things we promised, which is that you could ask questions and we could answer them, maybe. And my wrap-up would be to say that there is this balance that takes place in this area. In return for massive distribution of your work on the internet worldwide in a way in which you could never have dreamt you would be able to do, you know, you have to take a little bit of risk that other people will appropriate it in different ways, put it on their Tumblr accounts, do all kinds of things to it. Is it worthwhile? Well, that's a decision for you to make, but it's a algorithm, it's a calculus that you should be making. You know, you should be making a decision on the basis of balancing both sides of it. And in the same way, when you're dealing with fan art and when you're dealing with appropriation in the arts, what is the balance between, you know, what is an appropriate transformative use of a work or an appropriate use of the work for the purposes of portfolio display, and a use of the work that really impinges upon the original artist's ability to recover and to recover some compensation, be it accurate, be it physical money compensation or reputational compensation from the use of their own work. You know, where is that line and what is the balance? Well, the good part is when you come to the conclusion that you should be thinking of it in terms of balance rather than in terms of absolutes. And that's what we're hoping to do with the dialogue on DeviantArt. So we're open to your questions. If you have any questions, feel free to present them.
Before we start taking questions, I'd like to echo Josh's request that out of respect for the people, for all of you who are asking questions, a question might be sensitive, it might be of a personal nature, that we ask that you not record this portion of the session. Also, we're not going to be able to give you actual legal advice about your problem. We can talk to you about general principles that might apply to your problem.
Yeah, please don't rely on anything we say in any way at all. And please do not bring a lawsuit against me, Jack, or DJ.